Hey, I'm Eric Etheridge.
And I'm Danielle Webster. It's another episode of Prairie Beat.
Yep, our weekly discussion of newsworthy topics from Prairie Public. Danielle, the news moves fast. Doesn't take a break, doesn't take a holiday. We don't have time to waste. So what's on the beat this week?
Well, with the holidays behind us and winter in full swing, illness season is also running full tilt. So it's easy to always be looking at that. But this week, we are going to be talking about an adjacent topic related to that, changes in policy at the Centers for Disease Control and how that may be affecting public health overall.
Yeah, maybe you heard about this by now, especially if you're a parent. I know you're paying attention to this. That really is a timely topic for discussion today. The CDC this week, and really they've been signaling this for a while now under the direction of Robert F. Kennedy Jr., has changed or updated the recommendations for the childhood vaccine schedule. Now, RFK Jr. is someone who has certainly questioned and doubted the efficacy and safety of vaccines in the past, but until now, not a lot has changed at the federal level. But this week, it appears a seismic shift has begun.
Yes and no. So we can certainly get into that. For this topic, I was able to speak with a pediatrician from Sanford Health in Fargo.
Stephanie Hansen, pediatrician.
Yeah, already a pediatrician who has firsthand experience in treating children. I'm all ears, Danielle. What did Dr. Hansen have to say about all this?
She had a lot of things to say. So first, I asked her for her initial reactions to this. She told me these changes do not mean vaccines are going away, not being offered, or not being covered. But she says there could be ripple effects. So first and foremost, the actual changes.
The biggest gist of the change is there are 7 vaccines that were initially on the recommended schedule that have flipped now going into a risk-based recommendation, or what they call shared decision making. So they're encouraging families to discuss with their child's pediatrician whether or not their child should get that vaccine. So the large part of the vaccine schedule actually stayed the same, which is good. I think dialoguing with your child's pediatrician about your individual child is always a good thing.
North Dakota's public education requirements for vaccines haven't changed. The American Academy of Pediatrics, or AAP, hasn't changed their recommendations. Access for now isn't changing either, but Hansen says public trust in vaccines has been shifting for quite a while.
What I'm concerned about is going forward into the future, if there's any possibility that this could limit access to vaccines, if this could sow confusion or doubt in the public about the vaccine schedule and its safety. I think that's where my concern lies.
Yeah, okay. That sounds great. Love that journey for us. I mean, you know, no, not really. So 7 vaccines, which illnesses are we talking about here, Danielle?
Some of the illnesses are fairly common, but can also be pretty serious. So we're talking like flu, COVID, RSV, and rotavirus. My older son actually contracted rotavirus when he was about 2. Mm. It was miserable.
I bet.
And then there are diseases that are more rare, but can have pretty serious consequences later on. Those include hepatitis A, hepatitis B, and meningococcal. Hansen says the goals of vaccines for these types of illnesses are not only preventing sickness, but also preventing things like long-term chronic disease, organ injury, and even death. And she says the shots and the initial schedule has been studied a lot. So the vaccines are supposed to be given when babies and children are at an age where their immune systems can handle them, develop the immune response needed to ward off those diseases, and also protect them at vulnerable stages in their lives as well. A moment ago, I mentioned my son getting rotavirus when he was about 2. If he had contracted that as an infant, he probably would have required hospitalization. He was severely sick for 2 weeks straight, couldn't keep anything down. Dehydration was a big concern, and he lost a bit of weight too, which you really don't want to happen with little kids.
Well, gosh, yeah, that sounds pretty awful. Now, I'm a little shocked by this because you would figure a Scandinavian country, you would be pretty progressive in its medical efficacy. Mm-hmm. I read that the new recommendations mirror that of Denmark's vaccine schedule. Is that right?
Yes, it is. So I asked Dr. Hansen about that. Now, she says the schedule works great for a country like Denmark because they have a pretty small population. And with universal health care, which is easily accessible, they can get to the doctor when they're sick. They can get to the doctor easily for preventative care. And they also have well-funded parental leave policies in that country, too. She says for a country like the United States, where people are uninsured or underinsured, along with other differences, this schedule isn't as ideal.
We have large-scale disparities in people's ability to access medical care, to afford medical care, in a vast difference in parental leave policies where people have to return to work shortly after having a child, leaving their kids more vulnerable. So there really is a lot of demonstrable differences between the situation between what families have access to in Denmark versus the United States. And a vaccine strategy is not a one-size-fits-all thing across the world.
Okay, so all this is really interesting, and I will also say as a parent, it's a little concerning to me too, because I think it just makes things perplexing for other families out there. The CDC says one thing, the AAP says another, and I know we can always talk to our doctors about these things, which is what RFK Jr. says to do, just consult with your own doctor. But clearly, with information coming at people from all different directions, it can be overwhelming and just confusing about who to believe. Maybe that's the point. Our doctor, our government, or what our friends and neighbors say, what the internet says, Facebook or whatever. It all seems to be converging at a time when vaccine hesitancy is, from where I sit, accelerating.
And from where Dr. Hansen sits, it's accelerating too. She's been a pediatrician for 18 years, and I asked her about what she's been seeing in her patient pool. She told me there's always been pockets of hesitancy about vaccines, but around 10 years ago, those pockets started growing, and they only grew more during and after the pandemic. She's a little worried about what the future may bring. She's concerned about resurgence and diseases she's never thought she'd see in person, like measles. The HPV vaccine has proven to have success in reducing cancer rates, and even the mRNA vaccines, which we learned a lot about during COVID, have shown promise in the treatment of other diseases, and she thinks the doubt could lead to setbacks.
I don't fault people, and I never want someone to feel bad for wanting to do right by their kids, but I really do feel that some of the concerns are unfounded, and that when we look to the science and we look to the history of vaccines, you know, the story of the development of vaccines is one of great success. It's done a tremendous job in reducing child mortality over history. I think we need to continue to look to that and remind ourselves of why vaccines have been developed in the first place and the great good that they have done for humankind.
Yeah, that's one thing I really agree with, too, that I really can't fault people for wanting to do right by their kids. I mean, that's what we do in our house, and I'm sure that's what you do as parents as well. It's just a matter of making sure we're finding sources of trustworthy information to help us make those important decisions. I know you, Danielle, as a news person, might not like to make statements like these, but Danielle, when the government becomes one of the places that adds to that confusion, I guess that's what makes me most nervous. But I did like what Dr. Hansen said about, you know, encouraging more discussion with pediatricians. That's a good thing, unless they're on Facebook all the time, I guess. But hopefully they're able to help families make the most informed medicine and science-based decisions. All right, so that in our rearview mirror, I'll get off my soapbox. So what else are you and Dave and Todd working on in the newsroom this week?
I'm very excited to see what these dollars can do in terms of helping with the workforce challenges as it relates to health care here in the state of North Dakota.
A special legislative session will start in a couple of weeks here to receive $199 million in federal money for the Rural Health Transformation Program.
They are right behind us. It makes it sound like they're in pursuit of us.
It's been 5 years since the January 6, 2021 attack on the Capitol. Todd produced a piece that looked back on that.
This truck responded to the Capitol fire in 1930. That's pretty impressive.
And Dave did a fun story about a 100-year-old fire engine coming back to life.
Oh, cool. Certainly a mixed bag of stuff going on there. I like that fire engine story. You know, the kid in me kind of comes out when I hear that. But that's no different from any other week in the newsroom. Lots of variety, lots of important topics. Thanks for all that, Danielle.
You bet. Be sure to tune in to Prairie Public for more local news, or check us out online at news.prairiepublic.org.
Yeah, thank you for being with us on Prairie Beat this week. Thanks to Tay Calloway, our studio engineer and producer. I'm Eric Etheridge.
And I'm Danielle Webster. We'll see you back on the beat next week. Thank you.